This is the fourth in a series of shows. We'll finish up today. This is based on a book by Purushottam Das called The Names of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And we put this PowerPoint together, and as we did it, we discovered that there are 28 different names by which Krishna is called in the Bhagavad Gita. And we're on number 20 today, so we should reasonably be able to finish up in 20-25 minutes before the yoga class begins. A lot of the names of Krishna we find in the 11th chapter. There are just a lot of different names that when Arjuna sees the universal form of the Lord, just some or other incites Arjuna to just come out with all these different names. And this 20th name is Mahatma. Atma means soul, and Maha means great soul. There's another term by which Krishna is also known as Vishva Atma, which means the soul of the universe. You take the example of our bodies, and if you imagine that every atom in our body was like a planet, you see, that would give us some basis of comparison for the universal form of the Lord. In our body, we have one soul that predominates and is more or less aware of everything that's going on in this particular body. But our body is limited. But imagine a body that contained all the planets, and to which each planet was just like an atom. See, just as each atom is insignificant in our body, and we're more or less aware of our body, similarly imagine a form of the Lord which contained all of the planets, and each planet was compared to an atom. And the Lord was the soul in that body. So then he would be called Mahatma or Vishva Atma, the soul of the universe. Just like we have a soul of this body, this little tiny microcosm, similarly, the Lord is Mahatma or Vishva Atma, the soul of the macrocosm, the soul of the universe. And he knows everything that's going on in this universe. As the conscious entity in this body, I know the pains and pleasures in this body only. But as the conscious soul of the universe, he knows the pains and pleasures in each and every single body. Here's another, the 21st name by which Arjuna calls Krishna in the 23rd verse of the 11th chapter. O Mahabahu, Arjuna says, your great form consists of many faces, arms, eyes, thighs, and legs. And here we see a picture of the universal form. And another description of the universal form is time. The universal form is the manifestation of time. And into all those many mouths of the universal form, the Kaurava soldiers are rushing and being cracked by the teeth. In one sense, the battle has not yet taken place. They're just on the precipice of the battle. Arjuna is trying to decide whether he wants to fight or not. But in another sense, the battle has already taken place because within the Vishva Rupa, the universal form of the Lord, is contained past, present, and future. So what's going to happen has already happened from the point of view of universal time. And when Krishna shows Arjuna's universal form, Arjuna sees all the soldiers rushing into the mouths and being killed by the universal form of the Lord. So time kills everyone. As Krishna and Balaram destroyed Dhanukasura with their powerful arms to make the forest safe, so the universal form with powerful arms can destroy enemies. Krishna says all the soldiers on the other side are already destroyed by my energy or by my arms. All you need to do, Arjuna, is just be an instrument in the fight. But actually it's through my power that you will succeed in destroying them and saving the world from tyranny. Later on, after Krishna left the planet and withdraw his power from Arjuna, while escorting Krishna's queens from Dwarka to Hastinapur, he was defeated by a bunch of bandits on the side of the road. The same Arjuna who had fought Lord Shiva to a standstill, who had fought all the demigods, who had prevailed in the battle of Kurukshetra over Bhisma, Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, Karna, that same Arjuna was killed by, was defeated by a bunch of ordinary bandits along the side of the road. So when Krishna is referred to as Mahabahu or mighty armed, it's to be understood that Krishna is the one who's really defeating the other soldiers on the field through Arjuna. Now three names appear in rapid succession here, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. Ananta, Devesha, and Jagani Vasa. Ananta means limitless one. Ananta is also the name for the serpent on which the Lord lies down. Lord Vishnu lies on a bed of a serpent whose name is Ananta, and then the hoods shelter and protect the Lord. When you go to the most famous Krishna temple in South India, or in all of India for that matter, Tirupati, the temple lies at the head of the Tirumala Hills. There are a number of hills, and then at the head of these hills, at the head of the hills, the temple is situated. So these hills are considered to be none other than Anantashesha. And the Lord, Balaji or Venkateshwar, lies on the bed of these Tirumala hills, as Lord Vishnu lies on the back of Anantashesha. And it is said that though Ananta has unlimited mouths and he's always singing the glories of the Lord, he never reaches the end. He has uncountable mouths, and those mouths are 24/7 enumerating the glories of the Lord, and yet he's been doing it eternally, and he'll go on eternally, and he'll never come to the end of the glories of the Lord. Then Isha means Lord, and Deva means gods. Isha actually is a word which means Lord, and it's interesting that Jesus' name sounds a lot like Isha. In fact, if you were a Sanskrit speaker, when someone would come up to you and say, Jesus Christ, you would interpret that to mean Lord Christ, which could also be taken to mean Lord Krishna too, because the name Christ and Krishna are so similar as well. And Isha sounds more to a Sanskrit speaking, less a name than a title of supremacy or Lord. So Devisha means the Lord of all the gods. In the Bhagavad Gita he says, Name vidu suragana prabhavam maharishana. Neither the gods nor the rishis know me, because in every sense I am the source of the gods and the rishis. That he created the gods and the rishis. Just like none of us know our great-great-grandfather, because we weren't there when he was created. And so none of the gods, Brahma or Vishnu, they truly know Krishna, because Krishna is the source of these various divinities. Jagani Vas. Vas means refuge or shelter, and Jagat means universe. Just like we say Jagannath, Nath means controller, Jagat means universe. So Jagani Vas means the refuge of the universe. In fact, at the time of annihilation, the whole universe, the whole cosmic manifestation is retracted into the abdomen of the Lord. And he holds it there, and the living entities who are interrupted at the time of annihilation, they're all going about their plan-making business, and then there's an annihilation, and their plans are interrupted, and they're retracted within the abdomen of the Lord. Then a vast time period elapses, literally hundreds of millions of years, during which the material creation is non-manifest. There's only the spiritual world. Just like sometimes we have a cloud in the sky and sometimes we don't. The sky itself is always manifest, but the cloud comes and goes. So the spiritual world is always manifest, but the material world, sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. During the period it's not there, it can last, by our calculation, hundreds of millions of years, and the living entities are somnambulant within the abdomen of the Lord. And then when there's a time for recreation, everything comes out, all the phenomenal elements are created. You might say the cloud is then reappears in the spiritual sky. The Lord glances at earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, falls in, and the living entities come out through the glance of the Lord, and they are impregnated into material nature, and they take their births in 8,400,000 species of life. And they exactly resume what they were left off doing at the end of the last creation. It's like we give the example, whatever you're thinking of, usually the last thought before you go to sleep at night is the first thought that you wake up with in the morning. So even though vast periods of time elapse, still the living entities, they begin where they pretty much left off. So in that way, the Lord is the refuge of the universe and the source. Arjuna says, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to the material manifestation. And Arjuna has just become aware, by seeing the universal form and the destruction which is about to take place, that the scope of this is in fact panoramic. It's epic. You know, it's like on the level of World War I, World War II. There are going to be about 6,400,000 soldiers die in the next 18 days. And Arjuna is horrified. I mean, he's a hardened warrior, and he himself has killed tens of thousands of hardened other warriors. but he's never been present at destruction on this destruction on this level. And so even he recoils, and from having Krishna in his two-armed form as his friend and talking amiably and joking, all of a sudden Krishna is like time personified. He's like when Oppenheimer, the head of the team of scientists who created the atomic bomb, when they exploded the first test bomb in Alamogordo, New Mexico, Oppenheimer looked out through the slot of the bunker and saw the mushroom cloud, and probably had protective eyewear on and all, and he quoted the main verse from the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Kaloshmin Lokasaya Krit Pravato. Krishna says, in showing the universal form to Arjuna, time I am the destroyer of all worlds. I have come to engage all people except for you, Arjuna, and your five brothers. All soldiers on both sides will be slain. And Arjuna's like, whoa. When Krishna kills, he doesn't mess around. He kills big time. And actually, that's really nothing, because everyone dies by the arrangements of material nature. I mean, if a judge sentences a murderer to death, the judge is not responsible for the murderer's death. The murderer knew what the law was, and the murderer knew that when you kill someone, according to the law, you face either life imprisonment or death yourself. So he has to take responsibility himself for his own actions. You know, sometimes criminals are dragged and they're shouting and yelling at the judge, I'll get back at you, I'll get back at you. But they're missing the point. They were the ones that put them in that situation. The judge simply enacts the law as it's written. So in the same way, Krishna is killing everybody at all times throughout all of history. And so really, relatively speaking, the scale of this is not that great. But nevertheless, Arjuna has never seen anything like this. That when Krishna does stuff, he does it in a cosmic way. And then a couple other names. Ananta Virya means who has unlimited strength. Unlimited strength. Arjuna fought for 18 days. And if you read the Mahabharata, the soldiers were severely injured every day. They were severely injured every day. It describes... sometimes arrows would pierce their body. Sometimes they would have 100 arrows sticking out of them. And sometimes arrows would come out the other side. And yet some or other, by the power of the Lord, the power that had been invested, they didn't perish. And they continued fighting. And at the end of the day, the arrows would be pulled out and anointments would be applied and mantras would be chanted. And they'd be refreshed and they'd go at it again with full vigor the following day. And they did that for 18 days. Many of the Kaurava warriors receiving the same wounds that Arjuna received, they perished in the thousands. But some or other, Arjuna, because he was supported by Ananta Virya, Krishna, who has unlimited strength, was able to refresh himself every morning and go again with full vigor. So if nothing else, just due to atrophy, the Kaurava side was being chewed up, you see, by the forces of the Pandavas. And then Amita Vikrama. Vikram means one who's very heroic. And Amita, I believe, means apparently master of heroism. So this is the 40th verse in the 11th chapter where Arjuna addresses the Lord in his universal form still, O Ananta Virya, unbounded power, you are Amita Vikrama, the master of limitless might. You are all pervading, and thus you are everything. So if you're an opponent, if you're envious of the Lord, it's hard to contend with the Lord if he's everywhere. It's hard to contend with the Lord if he's everywhere, and everything is his might. When Hiranyakashipu asked his 5-year-old boy, Prahlad, Rani was trying to kill Prahlad in so many ways, and this big, big, powerful Hiranyakashipu, who had defeated the whole universe, he wasn't able to kill his 5-year-old son. And, I mean, he killed lots of big, powerful, but he wasn't able to kill his 5-year-old son. And this just really, really stupefied him. So out of frustration, once he just roared at Prahlad, his son, where do you get your power from? And Prahlad said, I get my power from the same place you do. In other words, Hiranyakashipu was thinking, his power versus the power of a 5-year-old, he should be able to take care of this 5-year-old in no time at all. But Prahlad had a different perspective. He said that Hiranyakashipu's power and to destroy and his power to resist destruction came from the same source. They came from the same source. So Hiranyakashipu should have been beholding to the same source that Prahlad was, but he wasn't. He thought that he was the architect of his own power. And so in the same way it says here, you are all pervading unless you are everything. So then Hiranyakashipu said, Prahlad, well, where is this all-powerful Lord of yours? And Prahlad said, he's everywhere. He's everywhere. So Hiranyakashipu didn't know what to do with that. And so he wanted some specifics. And he said, well, if he's everywhere, is he in this pillar? And Prahlad said, yeah. Which means he's everywhere, but he's also localized as well. He's everywhere, but he's also localized. In other words, he's one with the universe, but he's also separate. Achinta, beda, abeda, tattva. He's one with everything, because everything is the diffusion and expansion of his energies, but at the same time, he's separate, because he's the source of those energies, and he's not limited to those energies themselves. And so when Hiranyakashipu struck the pillar, the Lord came out of that pillar in a personal form, in the form of Nrisingadev, the half-man, half-lion incarnation. Now here is an example of the Lord being the master of limitless might. This was a pastime of his as Trivikram. The Lord covered the entire universe. When Bali Maharaj, the king of the demons, had sort of overthrown the demigods and he was performing a sacrifice, Lord Vishnu appeared in the form of a dwarf at that sacrifice. And a Brahmin at that. And the system was that even the demons would give the Brahmins whatever they wanted. And so Bali Maharaj asked this small little Brahmin, what would you like? And the Brahmin said, 3 steps of land. Bali said, he was just a little guy with short legs, and so Bali was encouraging him, well, why don't you ask for more than that? You know, I can give you gold, I can give you horses, I can give you a nice wife. 3 steps of land doesn't seem very much. And playing a little coy, Trivikram said, well, I'm a Brahmin, and I don't want to be greedy, and I think 3 steps of land will be just fine. You know, one should not take more than what one needs if one's a Brahmin. You know, shouldn't leverage that position in order to get, you know, more charity than what one needs. So finally, Bali Maharaj and Sukracharya, the guru of Bali Maharaj, knew that something was up here. This wasn't an ordinary dwarf. He had too much effulgence and too much power and all like that. So Sukracharya was trying to convince Bali to go back on his word. And then Bali said, no, I've promised him. And whatever happens, happens, you know. And it was and so when the wish was formally granted, you see here how the dwarf started expanding himself. And he got giganticer and giganticer and giganticer and giganticer. And with his first step, he covered the whole earth planet. He took possession of the earth planet. And his second step just expanded out outer space. And it actually punched the edge of the covering of this particular universe. And from that puncture, that perforation, the spiritual water of the Garbhodak ocean in which this universe floats. Each universe is like a football floating on this spiritual water. And when that hole was made, the water came in. And that was very purifying water, but it was torrential. And it was threatening to sweep the whole 3 planetary systems away in its flood. So that's when Lord Shiva was asked if he wouldn't accept the weight of that water on his head and disperse it. And one of those little rivulets came to the earth planet as the Ganges. And people consider that for several reasons, that when they sip Ganges water, bathe in Ganges water, their sins are eliminated because of the fact that this was a spiritual ocean in the first place. And the second fact is that when the Lord's toe punctured, that water came in over his toe. It rather washed his toe. And so by virtue of having contact with the feet of the Lord, the Ganges water purifies one of sin. And then Vamana said, okay, I've covered everything with 2 steps, and yet I have one more. There's nothing else for me to take possession of, because I've claimed everything with 2 steps. And then thinking very intelligently, Bali Maharaj, who was a devotee, even though he's a demon, he was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, And therefore, as it said, 10 generations past and 10 generations future of a pure devotee are liberated. So here is how Bali Maharaj gets his liberation. He very intelligently says, put your third step on my head. And his reasoning was, the possessor is greater than the possessions. He had conquered all the worlds, and even though he had lost them, he figured, I could do it again if I wanted to. Many rich people, they've made a million, lost a million, made a million, lost a million, made a million. The million's not important, but the person is more important. The possessor is more important than the possessions. So he surrendered and became famous as having surrendered himself completely to the Lord. And of the 9 processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting, the last one is giving everything to the Lord, and that's personified by Bali Maharaj. Achyuta here the Lord has elsewhere been called Achyuta, so this isn't a different name. But in calling Krishna Achyuta, Arjuna speaks this verse, 42nd verse, please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relax, lay in the same bed, or sat or ate together, sometimes alone or in front of many friends. O infallible one, please excuse me for all these offenses. Krishna and Arjuna are soulmates, you might say. They incarnate life after life after life. They're inseparable. And as such intimate friends, sometimes they insult each other. You know, there's a certain, after a while, if you're really good friends, you throw away the formalities, the excuse me, the pleases, you know, do you mind? And you just have a certain chemistry between the two of you. And if you're a really good friend, you actually enjoy insulting each other. I don't know if any of you have a friend that good or that intimate, but Vatsal's my friend, you know. He knows, Radhakrishna knows Vatsal because he's from Hawaii and Vatsal's a friend. But Vatsal and I, if you see us together, we're insulting each other all the time. I mean, just back and forth. Because we've known each other for like 40 years. And, you know, and we make fun of each other, and it's fun. It's fun. I mean, I enjoy being with Vatsal more than someone say, well, you enjoy being with someone who insults you? And I say, yeah, because we're not envious of each other, and it's in a good, friendly spirit. So even God enjoys getting insulted by Arjuna. But right now, he's seeing Krishna in the universal form. He's thinking, oh my God, you know, I was insulting him, and I was minimizing him, and now he's like, he's the time, the destroyer of all worlds. He's the universal form. And Arjuna just kind of gives a big old gulp, you know. And that's why devotees, when they advance in devotional service and love of Krishna begins to manifest, that Krishna helps them by casting an illusion, casting them in a spell of illusion whereby they forget that Krishna is God. This is called the yoga maya, because if you're conscious that Krishna is God, the be-all and the end-all, the one of unlimited strength and all, then you can't love him, because you realize he doesn't need you. He doesn't need you. So the love of Krishna is actually based on the principle that you forget that Krishna is God. Krishna doesn't need you to help him out, but he needs your love. He needs you because he created us to love us. He created us uniquely. And so Krishna is willing to play the role of the son of Mother Yashoda, the savior of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the friend of the cowherd boys, in order to bring out the love which is all in us, which was embedded within us at our creation. And Krishna is willing to cover himself and not manifest himself before us in a monarchical, majestical, awe-inspiring mode. But he'll manifest before you as your son, as your lover, as your friend, as your playmate, in order to evoke the loving sentiments with which he endowed us originally. And so Arjuna is fully involved in that, lifetime after lifetime, but now he's seeing this formal, majestic, Old Testament, monarchical vision of the Lord, and he's like thinking, oh my gosh, you know. And he's going back and he's reviewing all the instances between the two of them when they were relaxed, and he was kind of minimizing the Lord and all like that. So here it says, terrified after seeing the universal form of the Lord, Arjuna addresses him to remind of his quality of forgiveness. He says, Lord, you know, please forgive me. You know, you're great, and you're great in forgiveness too, and I'm counting on that right now. You know, even though I've committed many offenses, your affection for me is not reduced. So this is the 27th the second to last name by which Krishna is called in the Bhagavad Gita, and we'll just finish up here in the next couple of minutes. In the 46th verse, O thousand-armed Lord, I wish to see you in your forearm form with helmeted head, club, chakra, lotus flower in your hands. I long to see you in that form. So we introduce the universal form by saying, we enjoy different kinds of foodstuffs. We enjoy sweet, we enjoy sour, we enjoy bitter. So Arjuna had been enjoying the sweetness of a personal relationship with the Lord. But just for a little variety, he asked Krishna to give a graphic demonstration of his supremacy, of his omnipotency, of his divinity, so that future generations would know that Krishna is God. Arjuna had already accepted that, but he wanted a graphic demonstration. And so when Krishna revealed the universal form, it was certainly a different manifestation than what Arjuna was used to. And he wanted to experience that sort of bitterness as opposed to the sweetness of amicable relationship with Krishna. But now he's had enough. He's had enough, you know. You know, every once in a while you get a craving for Kerala, for bitter melon, you know. Really spicy, bitter melon. And you have a little bit of it and then you're satisfied for another 6 months or so. You don't need it anymore, you know. So now he's saying, okay, enough. I want to see you in your forearm form and then your two-arm form. And Prabhupada explains it here. As a devotee, Arjuna prefers the four-handed form for friendly exchanges. The universal form is uncongenial for such. At least four-arm form allows for service in awe and reverence. And then, of course, the two-arm form is the form with which Arjuna has an eternal friendly relationship him. So here it is said, Ishvara, Krishna has been called Ishvara before. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord Himself, who entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. This is that word Ishvara again. Ishvara, Ishvara Parama Krishna. There are many lords, there are many masters, but there is one Lord who has no master over Him. Like Jerry might be said to be the master of his home, although Lisa might not go for that entirely. But just, you know, just as a title, we say, you know, the Lord of the Manor and so on and so forth. But then when he goes to work, you know, he has his regional supervisor. And when the supervisor drops in, Jerry has to kowtow to him. And then the regional supervisor has someone that he has to be responsible. And even the demigods themselves have other divinities they have to be responsible for. And ultimately, they're all accountable to Krishna or Vishnu. And the unique feature of Vishnu, we're all lords in some respect or another. But he's the Lord who has no other Lord over him. He's the Lord of lords. No one else is qualified to be called the controller of all. He creates the worlds and enters into them for maintaining them. Whoever knows me without doubting is the knower of everything. All right, we're finishing up. Because this is the last in a series, we want to finish it today and not leave it just with one or two left. So this is the last name of Krishna, the 28th different name by which Krishna is referred to in the Bhagavad Gita, Kesini Sudana. And that means killer of the Kesi demon. Arjuna says, I wish to understand the differences between Tyaga and renunciation. When Krishna was exhibiting his childhood pastimes in the rural, rustic area of Vrindavan, Kamsa, the evil king, fearing that Krishna would kill him in the future, sent many protean wizards into Vrindavan to kill Krishna. And one of them took the form of a horse named Kesi. And that horse aspired to trample Krishna with his iron-like hooves. But as he was charging Krishna, Krishna punched through his mouth with his left hand. And once his fist was in the throat of the Kesi demon, it began to burn like red hot, and it also began to expand. So it both burned the horse and also choked him. And the Kesi demon kind of exploded, just like a child breaks open a cucumber. So Arjuna wants Krishna to destroy his hesitancy, wants Krishna to remove any inability of his to face up to the monumental task before him. Krishna wants to smash all the obstacles in his way because Arjuna is rapidly coming to that point where he wants nothing more than to surrender and to follow the orders of Krishna. And again, he reaffirms this. This is one of the very last verses of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Nashta moha smritir labda tat pashara mayatuta stito smin gata sandeha karishase vachanam tava. O Krishna, my illusion is now gone. I regain my memory by your mercy. So the Lord started instructing Arjuna in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita because he didn't want Arjuna to fail in his duty. Arjuna was a heralded warrior. He was known for his bravery. He was known for never shirking from his duty. And because it was his cousins and his teachers that he had to fight, he was on the verge. He was flirting with the idea of laying down his arms and leaving the battlefield. Krishna did not want that ignominy for his friend. And so the whole Bhagavad Gita is to fortify, to gird up Arjuna, to help him see the big picture, and to get him to go ahead and do his duty and fight. So Krishna is helping Arjuna to keep his promise, to protect the innocent. Okay, this is Yogeshwara, the very last appellation of Krishna. Sanjaya, who narrates the Bhagavad Gita to the blind king Dhritarashtra, he sums up everything. He says there was Arjuna, there's the Kauravas, there's the Pandavas, they're outnumbered. There's the Kauravas, they have many formidable soldiers, they have greater numbers. Here is Krishna, here is Arjuna, here is Duryodhana, and so on and so forth. And now, having heard this wonderful conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, I am concluding that even though the Kauravas have vastly superior numerical forces, I'm concluding that because Krishna, the Supreme, is on the side of the Pandavas, that the Kauravas cannot win. And here is his conclusive statement. Yatra yogeshwara Krishna yata parta dunur darya yata striya vijaya bhutir dhruva nitir matamama, which translates, wherever there is Yogeshwara, Krishna, and Danudara, Arjuna, there will certainly be opulence, extraordinary victory, power, and morality. That is my opinion. And here we have the battle being engaged now. Arjuna is free from doubts. He's acting not independently, not on his own, but he's acting as a servant of Krishna, as an instrument. And this is our final slide and our final statement in this series, where it is said, Yogeshwara always maintains his devotee's glorious position. Though the Pandavas are outnumbered, Yogeshwara has inconceivable potencies. From the very beginning of the Gita, the Pandavas' victory is indicated through the various names by which Krishna is known. And that concludes our series. Om Tat Sat.